Okay, welcome back. Again, this is episode 8, I believe, of Addiction and Redemption. If you haven't figured it out by now, my name is Dave Keenest. Shoot me an email, dave@davekeenest.com. Let me know what you think. I'm really just telling the story. I'm kind of getting into the gnarlier part of the addiction now. And the redemption isn't going to happen for a while, but my intention is for this to evolve into something pretty cool in the long run. So I left off the last episode. I got kind of hooked on OxyContin after a snowboarding injury. And I deserved the snowboarding injury because I had injured a little girl or almost run over a little girl. And that was sort of the end of my second season in Steamboat. So that season ended. I was pretty much out of commission for the rest of the season because I had a broken collarbone. And the summer came along, and the summers in Steamboat were just kind of boring. I just didn't really enjoy them. And so I had traveled back down to Fort Collins for like a long weekend and stayed with my old roommate, Tyler. He was my freshman year dorm roommate. And just for whatever reason, I decided in the moment that I would, or rather, I kind of got this whim, rather, to move back to Fort Collins. And the reason I wanted to move back to Fort Collins from Steamboat was I wanted to party. That's really the only reason. I wanted to party. I wanted to be around all the hot chicks and all that stuff. And a lot had actually changed in Fort Collins in the 2 years that I had been gone, or even the year and a half I had been gone. It had developed a culture of its own and was just this rock and music scene. But really, I wanted to party. And I was actually, Steamboat was beautiful, and it was just really serene. And it was too serene for me. It was too mellow. I was too chaotic. I was too crazy. I wanted to be around people. I wanted to be around the music and the loud rock and roll and all that stuff. And so I just packed my shit and I moved. Moved back down to Fort Collins, moved in with my old roommate, had a room, started working concrete, got this job working concrete. And I really got my shit together pretty quickly. I got a job at a good restaurant called Jay's Bistro, cooked there for 3 years. And I actually got a job working for AmeriCorps. So I was actually working with third grade kids and as a third grade kind of like teaching assistant. And I really just fell in love with it. And it was my calling. And I worked there for a year. I finished an AmeriCorps contract. And from there, worked the following year at a school called the Mountain View Village School, which was a school for troubled youth. And that was a really super fun, rewarding experience itself. And, you know, I kind of became a weekend warrior when I was working at the school. So it was just like, I actually stayed in during the week. And then on the weekends came along and I would just party my fucking balls off. I mean, I worked Monday through Friday in the school, and then I worked Friday and Saturday nights in the restaurant. And so from Friday was a day that went from like 7 in the morning until like, you know, midnight or sometimes even 1 in the morning, I think. Maybe not that late, but pretty darn late. And I would get done working and I would just party. I would just get fucked up. I mean, just hammered. And so I'm starting to kind of get some new friends. I'm falling in with this kind of like punk rocker crowd and trying to getting my hands on more and more pills and just starting to just pretty much do whatever comes along. And there's a lot more cocaine coming into my experience. My roommate was kind of addicted to cocaine, so there was a lot of his cocaine I was doing. Again, other people's cocaine. I'd be happy to snort your cocaine. Not one of those guys that pays for it, although that changed. So that year went by, and then I got into grad school. So my experience in my second stint in Fort Collins was actually 5 years long, and I'm going to fast forward through a lot of it because it's irrelevant. But I got into grad school to be a teacher, and the program I got into was called Project Promise, and it was a teaching program called Professionals with a Mission in Education. That's what Promise stood for. So by the time this year rolls around, this is my third year back in Fort Collins. So it's a total of 8 years I've been there when you take Steamboat out of it. I got a DUI mixed in there too, so I was starting to see consequences. I think I got a disorderly conduct ticket as well. But I was kind of serious about being a teacher. I was serious about being a teacher. But by this point, I didn't realize it, but I'm a lot more fucked up than I had planned on getting, and I mean just in general. So I'm this really sort of cocky, sort of know-it-all teacher because I had experience working with these kids and with AmeriCorps, and no one else in the program did, and so I thought I was super fucking cool, And really, I was just super arrogant. And I was, by this point, I was a total drug addict. So I was starting to, you know, before grad school, I was starting to snort Adderalls. And I'm getting, you know, I'm using pills to help me get to sleep at night. So I'm taking Valiums and whatever I can get my hands on. And on the weekends, again, I'm partying my ass off. And I'm student teaching sixth graders. And, you know, if I get my hands on Vicodin, I'd be teaching high on Vicodin and whatever else. And that year passed. And some really bad shit went down. I ended up not getting a teaching license. And all of my hopes and dreams were really shattered when that happened. I really just, by the end of, this would have been 2004, by the spring of 2004, so March, April of 2004, it just wasn't working. And all these people who I went to grad school with were getting jobs for the following year. And for reasons of my own doing, I could not get a job that year because I didn't get licensed, and that's just too long of a story to explain. But so I had to postpone getting my teaching license for another year. So all these people I went to grad school with are getting jobs, and I'm just kind of left in the dust, and I'm turning to the drink more and more and more. Now, at the time, I'm living with my little brother and this other guy, Logan, and they're both 8 years younger than me, and I'm kind of like the big brother, but you know, they actually had their shit together much more than I did. We all partied, but my partying really started to go downhill. My life started to go downhill. And so I got a job the following year after grad school working in an elementary school. And this is when I started to really lose control. So although I wasn't drinking during the week because I had a 9-to-5 job working in this elementary school as a teacher's aide, the weekends, I was really just starting to tear it up on the weekends and basically give myself alcohol poisoning. And I was starting to really, I would party so hard on Saturday night that I couldn't get out of bed all day Sunday, and then I would have to work Monday morning, but I would still be hungover on Monday morning. Mind you, I'm doing whatever I can get my hands on, and something happened that winter. So this is sort of the turning point of it all. The winter of 2004 and 2005, my friend, they should probably remain nameless, but some people who became really good friends of mine and also really good drug buddies started introducing much harder drugs. So, and it wasn't really the harder drugs, but ways of ingesting drugs that was much harder. So we started injecting cocaine that winter, and we got our hands on some drugs. It's called Dilaudid. It's a, you know, it's an opiate. And so we would inject Dilaudid. And that winter, something just shifted. So I'm teaching elementary school kids or working with elementary school kids Monday through Friday. And I'm injecting cocaine and drinking myself halfway to death on the weekends. And whenever I can get my hands on pills, I'm obviously taking as many opiates as I can possibly get my hands on. And this is when it gets interesting again, because what happened was, it turns out I had this next door neighbor, this Mexican guy. His name was Luis. I lived in a Hispanic neighborhood in Fort Collins. And this guy basically groomed me, but he was this, I think he was a sociopath, a total psycho. I don't think he's above murder, honestly, but him and his wife lived next door to me in this little like trailer house. And him and I sort of started making small talk here and there when we would see each other outside. And he started giving me pills. Oh, he started giving me these really good, they weren't Vicodin, they were like better than Vicodin. They were Lortabs, I think. They were these big pink opiate pills. And then he started giving me OxyContins, right? So I'd had OxyContins a few years ago at this point, from that snowboarding injury, and now he's got 40 milligram OxyContins, and they're yellow, and the ones I got were 10s or 20s, and now he's got these really powerful ones, and he's just giving them to me. And what happened over the course of that winter and moving into the fall, or into the spring rather, is I was becoming a very seriously addicted opiate user. And that OxyContin stuff, it's basically like heroin. I mean, a lot of heroin addicts will tell you that they'd rather have OxyContin than heroin because of how clean it is. And all of a sudden, by the spring of 2005, I have a serious fucking problem that I didn't even see it as it was being created. And that guy, Lewis, my neighbor, he kind of vanished. He kind of left his wife. and checked himself into a mental hospital or something. I can't remember, a VA's mental hospital, I think it was. And so then it's just me and his wife, who's like this 70-year-old woman with MS. And so she starts kind of like having me come over to like fix things and or whatever, to like keep her company or move furniture, whatever. It was just a random reason to have somebody to use drugs with. And what we would do is, this woman had a, she had a subscription for 60, prescription rather, for 60, 80 milligram OxyContins. Now, these are the good ones. These go for probably $150 a piece nowadays. This is still before OxyContin has caught on, right? It's still kind of on the verge of catching on. But more and more opiate users are familiar with it. So she's got these 80 milligram OxyContin pills, and her husband's gone, and he was kind of giving them to me, slash he had started to sell them to me for like 10 or 20 bucks a piece, but now he's out of the picture. So her and I would sit in her kitchen, and we would take these 80 milligram OxyContin pills, and we would crush them up in this little pill crusher, and we would snort them. And you get so high off these things, so high. And then she also had 20 milligram pills that she got like 30 or 60 of those per month. And what me and my friends would do, some of these friends who I mentioned earlier, is we would start injecting them. And so what happened by that spring is we were actually doing speedballs with them. So we're mixing the cocaine that we're shooting with the OxyContin pills. And this is where you're getting into a really deadly game. And this is the part of the story that makes me realize that I am blessed to be alive, because there's a lot of people that do these sorts of things that do not wake up, or they fall asleep from doing that and they never wake up. It happened to a good friend of mine a couple years ago, Brandon. And he came home from the bar just like I used to back in the day in Fort Collins, and he took a pill and he never woke up. And this was we're starting to play deadly games, me and my friends. And all of a sudden, this problem is much, 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 much bigger than me. And I have absolutely no idea what to do about it. And I wasn't even fully aware as to what had happened. All I know is that one day it was much worse. And that school year ended, and I actually got a job. I did manage to line up some teaching interviews and to be a teacher, and I went to the interviews completely blasted on drugs. And you can't really, those you know, when somebody's high on opiates, it's kind of tricky to tell when they're high. You kind of have to have an eye for it and an ear for it. But I was really just blasted out of my mind by this point. And I'm doing odd jobs, and I got a job working construction. And this construction worker guy, he's a total psycho, and he just yelled all the time. And he had this other guy that worked with him, who actually had another prescription for OxyContin. So now I have two solid OxyContin hookups. And then I met this other guy in Wyoming. So it's almost like the universe, you know, I think it was the devil, was really conspiring to get me as fucked up as possible, because all of a sudden there's all these people in my experience with these very, 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 very powerful pills. And I wasn't paying that much money for them. I want to say I was paying 10 or 20 bucks a piece, if that, and now the going rate is much higher than that. And I'm injecting them whenever I can. I'm waking up in the mornings, and I got this bullshit, just excruciatingly difficult construction job that I'm working. And I'm waking up in the morning, and I'm shooting OxyContin if I have it, or snorting it if I had it, and getting to work feeling really good, but it would wear off around noon. And then the afternoons would be excruciating. And then I would have to score in the afternoon from this woman who I mentioned, this woman Kathy, who is my next door neighbor, if she had them. And all of a sudden I'm just in this crazy shuffle. And then I would very often go out to the bars at night and get drunk too, and wake up in the morning and do it all over again. And it was when I really started to notice that when the opiates wear off, you've got a serious fucking problem, because I started to get sick over it. So I started to actually have heroin withdrawals from these OxyContins, and started to really, really, really need them. And, you know, if I can't get any OxyContin, how can I get some Vicodin? And so I start kind of like, I could kind of sniff out people's pills in their pockets when I'd go to the bars. You just kind of get this sense for where the stuff that you want is. And all of a sudden, I'm just kind of possessed. All of a sudden, I'm possessed by this addiction. Now, this is probably September, October of 2005, August, September, October. Actually, I'll rewind a little bit. It evolved from like June through September, October. By October, I've got like a really serious problem, and I didn't realize that it had happened. And I'm starting to have some interest in recovery, but I'm not even close to ready for it. But at least I knew I had a problem. So this is sort of like the turning point, is this episode. This is when it goes from pretty bad to much, much, much worse. And then it's gonna, you know, the next few episodes are really gonna dive into the real darkness of it. So thanks again for listening. Once again, you know, my name is Dave Keenest. Go to DaveKeenest.com. I don't do addiction stuff for a living. I've mentioned this many times. I'm actually a life and business coach. And the purpose of sharing these addiction stories is to get people present to their hero's journey. So what happens when that thing that life throws at them does what it does and they choose to rise above it? So we're going to get to that part of the story, the rising above it part. So if you've taken anything from this, and I hope you have, you feel free to reach out to me and let me know. And we'll probably got 3, 4, 5, 6 really gnarly episodes ahead of us before life gets all happy and cheery and fun. So thanks again for listening. Brought to you by Keenest Coaching. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the episode. And you all have a beautiful night. Bye-bye.